This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and you're searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, your customers get every way to pay. To learn more and to try out the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/androidcentral. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 249. Wow, that was exciting for an arbitrary number. For Friday, August 14th, 2015. Welcome to the show. Welcome back. I am Phil Nickinson. I run this little Android Central thing, and we've got four of us this week. It's a good four, I think. We're missing Jerry. Jerry's just taking the day off to work on some stuff, but we have Russell Holly.
Woo!
Wow.
I tried to match your enthusiasm.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I was trying to figure out, why am I so excited about 240 or 249? It's like so close to 250, which is also just whatever.
Whoa, there's going to be thunder in a second. I just saw lightning.
Andrew, boys and girls, is learning about science.
What M clouds?
Guess what happens, Andrew, if there's smoke?
Well, around here, it doesn't necessarily mean fire.
How is Babby formed? And Alex,
I was just going to assume you provoked the wrath of God by opening Galaxy Note 5 in Seattle there.
It did start immediately as I started my Periscope unboxing. See,
that's science right there.
All right, now we have an important, for everybody watching the video. By the way, hi everybody, we do this once a week live-ish.
Howdy.
For everybody watching the video, we have an important decision to make. Alex has a square avatar on his lower third. The rest of us are using round.
Oh, that's the old one. There we go. That's the new one.
I kind of like the square.
Maybe wow, that was a quick swap there.
Wow, yeah.
I got him hot. I'm going to go back to square.
I don't remember having a square one. That's old.
It's the details that really make this podcast what it is, especially for the people who can't see it.
It's also like a different shade of green on the back, or it's like has a gradient or something.
So we got a lot going on today. And you know what? I want to do what we did last week. We're going to start again. We got a couple voicemails. Let's just go ahead and do them and give them our full undivided attention before we get off on God knows what. How about that?
Sure. Pull the popper.
I wasn't here last week, so this is new to me.
But... Oh, it's a lot. It's exactly like doing voicemails at the end.
Except for we don't forget about them.
Except we do them at the beginning.
Go ahead.
All right. So let's start with, who is that? Gary. I said, let's start with
Gary. Gary.
Oh, beach ball. I'm getting a beach ball fail. The Mac gods.
iMac.
I mean, it's going to start any second here. Maybe. I hope. Wow. It's been a long time since we've had any See, Russell wasn't here in the old days. And I know there's some people in there who've been listening since like show two when things were really bad. Especially once we started going live and like had no idea if anything was going to work from week to week or how well it was going to work. Well, let's do this. Let's start off with while we are waiting for that. From one failure to another, apparently, depending on who you ask. This week in Is Android Doomed / Malware / Stage Fright? Where are we?
I was wondering what direction you were going with that.
I know. So we talked about this internally for a while this morning. Another company has come forward now that Google is supposedly sending out patches to Nexus devices, and they are, in fact. And other manufacturers are sending out patches to the Stage Fright thing, which is, you know, has 950 million phones possibly exploited, and only not really because nobody's been exploited and Google's got other layers of security to keep you safe, and it's so tiring. But this other company came out today and said, well, oh, hang on, one of the patches, and to be clear, it's not like one thing being patched and that's it, you're done. There are like, you know, a number of specific things that needed to be fixed. This company came out and said that, oh, hey, look at that. Looks like one of the things isn't patched. Only it kind of said it in, let's just put it out there. They were kind of being dicks about it. So I guess my question is, if something else is still broken, does Google need to send out another patch? What does that mean for the devices that have already been patched? But really, when I get down to it, if that's the worst thing that's happened here and something is still not fixed, then we're right back where we were a week ago, which is, okay, there's this possible avenue of exploit that is mitigated on 90, 95% of all devices by these other layers of security. Does that...
Yeah, I mean, I think from like a user perspective, not a whole lot changes as a result of this.
Yeah.
There are these other layers of security, like we're saying. The main thing, I guess, is it doesn't really inspire confidence if you're fixing this kind of thing and then you fix it and you don't really fix it properly. There's that, and again, I think it was exploit. The test case was on a Nexus 5 running the latest firmware, so presumably that, you know, at the very least, other Nexus devices would be affected. We don't know if the patch that OEMs are putting out is going to be affected by that. So there are a lot of unknowns here still.
I mean, as somebody who on occasion has to fix things more than once before it works, I get it. It happens. Russell, I mean, is this just another sky is falling thing, or is it honestly bad, or just kind of like, eh, all right, they'll fix it, they're smarter than we are?
Here's the thing, I'm gonna take a slightly different stance on this one. I don't know. I really just don't. Google hasn't said anything in response to this exploit yet. I don't know if it is somehow worse than the original form of the exploit. The guys who explained it did a great job explaining the technical reasons that things are failing, but not anything else, and I feel like there's some context there that is really, really important, and a lot of people who aren't security researchers took that information and kind of ran with it. I've reached out to people that I know that I think are really smart when it comes to this kind of thing and haven't gotten like clear answers yet, so I think I'm going to stick with I don't know, but I'm pretty sure we're not any better off or worse off than we were a week ago.
I agree. That's my take after spending most of the morning today reading about it. I mean, you can use it as a holy crap, why is Google so dumb moment, but I don't think that's true. I think intellectually we all know that there's a lot more going on, a lot of people working on this stuff, and the same things we've talked about the past few weeks. So my take is that, yeah, I'm not worried, and yeah, there's a lot we don't know. And another example, I think, of how to not necessarily discuss potential exploits by a security company who should probably know better. They're being dicks. And trust me, I know how to do that. I do it a lot. Sometimes I do it accidentally, sometimes not. I don't think this was a particularly good way to do it.
I think that is actually kind of an interesting conversation to have maybe at another point, is that so far we've seen a lot of these security companies don't actually know how to talk to consumers, which I think is interesting and probably important. You know, I think a lot of these guys are used to only dealing with the individual companies, but now they're making these big posts reporting this stuff and you know, making these claims. They should probably have someone that knows how to talk to regular human beings on the payroll for this kind of stuff, and maybe not have a mission accomplished banner in the background of your image.
Yeah.
Or invite people to your sick bro party in the middle of your security broadcast.
That was kind of my thing from the get-go of all this. And again, as somebody who from time to time has been known to say dumb things like that, I get it. But enough. Just enough. What do you guys think about I know Google's talking new transparency, and it's funny, we've actually had in our local politics here, we've had a big thing about that lately because the city government came out and said, we're going to be very transparent about all this stuff. And it said so while it was in the midst of this huge transparency crisis, actually. So you get a little worried when people are saying, look how open we are. Yeah. But they have this new Google group where they disclosed, more details about all this stuff and exactly what was going on and what was being fixed and where it was being fixed. But meanwhile, the discussions around some of that stuff have been quashed. I think Jerry's right. And Jerry was kind of the voice of reason for us this morning when he said, look, there's just so much we don't know. And I will flat out say what Jerry reminded us several times today was, you know, last week we said, look, we're not security guys. We don't want to pretend to be. And that absolutely rings true today. There's just so much we don't know, but even if something is not fixed, in my mind, that just puts us back where we were last week. Like, okay, it still needs to be fixed. And there's still mitigating circumstances. Alex doesn't care. See? That's his don't care face. All right, so we're done with states, right? Are we good?
For now, I mean, we'll have to go back to it when more's known.
I know.
It'll be this ongoing thing. But.
I know. All right. Should we try to do our voicemails now?
Go for it.
I know it was an excellent segue into stage fright and a really horrible one out of it, but let's see if Gary can make up for it with this question. Let's see if I'm ready for Gary. I think so.
Hi, my name is Gary. I am Fatboy97 on the forums, and I'm from the Twin Cities up in the Great White North. I currently own a Moto X 2014, and my questions are around the Nexus devices. Since I haven't followed the Nexus devices before, I was wondering who makes the announcements on this. Is it Google or is it the manufacturers? I'm just wondering when the specifics are and the real specs of what these devices are going to be coming out. So who makes the announcements? And also, is there any big announcements coming up in the next couple of weeks that are scheduled or anything, any place that they could do an announcement on this device? Thanks for listening. And to quote Jerry from a long time ago on one of the earlier podcasts, love, peace, and chicken grease. Thanks, guys. Bye.
The short answer to that is yes and both. There have been times where they've done it really well and the announcements come simultaneously from Google and the manufacturer. There have been once or twice where I think LG put it out like 15, 20 minutes before. And that was kind of fun.
Sometimes there's like a big get together. Sometimes they're just send out phones to people. It's
been a long time since.
Increasingly it is just like a blog post and then, you know, they send out phones the next day, right?
Well, I mean, they haven't done like an event since the Nexus, since the Galaxy Nexus?
Well, Nexus 7 2013 had its own event.
That's true. Yeah. Yep,
but that was different. He's talking about phones, but still, that's still a Nexus.
Yeah. Last year was they announced the phone, and then we were up in New York to see it. I forget how much later. It was not a huge amount of time, but it was a little while later.
They just did like a, hey, come check out the Nexus 6.
Yeah. We're like, hey, after all right, they, cool.
One morning, they just decided to put up a bunch of blog posts. They announced the phone, the tablet, and Lollipop.
Yeah, I mean, and we might get rumors of when it's going to be as we get closer to it, just because things happen. I mean, you guys know how I feel about these rumors. But, yeah, I mean, it's coming. As far as what's coming up, I mean, really the big thing now is IFA. That's the first week of September. We'll be in Berlin. When does that actually start? So, like, we get there and start working kind of like the first, right? First and
second. It technically starts on the third, doesn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't start till the third.
Media day is like first and second. That's where all the press conferences happen.
All right, so one more voicemail. Good job, Phil. Matt.
Hey, guys, this is Matt from Michigan. And just had a quick question. Wondered if the Moto G was going to be available on Verizon. I currently have a family share plan with my wife and wanted to order the Moto G and add him to the family share plan. My other thoughts are not to do the family share and just to get a straight talk SIM and put them on a separate plan from what we have currently, if it's not available on Verizon. So let me know. Thanks.
We know that there's a CDMA version that's made, but they specifically called out Boost, Virgin, and Sprint prepaid. The last Moto G was available for Verizon prepaid only. So I think no matter what, you're gonna have a tough time getting it. Even if they make a Verizon version, getting them to activate it on a family postpaid plan. And I think we discussed this. We were discussing this morning. We don't know when they do bring out these prepaid Moto G models, if it's going to be only the 1 gig, 8 gig models, or if it's going to be the 2 gig, 16 gig models. My thought is it's probably going to be the cheaper ones anyway, which you might not want.
Yeah, that's the way it's gone in the UK. A lot of the carriers have stocked just the 1 and 8 gig versions, not the more expensive one. You really got to go through Motorola to get the better one, unfortunately.
Right. And if you're going to just put a prepaid SIM in there anyway, you're probably better off just buying one from Motorola, get the slightly higher-end version, and then you can pick your plan, get them on a cheap prepaid plan for $30 or $40.
For what it's worth, I tried putting a Verizon SIM in this one that I have, and it didn't like it. It was not happy about that at all.
You just don't listen to authority.
Can't stop me.
Yeah, there's a distinctly separate SKU with the CDMA and LTE bands for U.S. Sprint and Verizon.
By the way, the 16 2-gigabyte version, it's still saying it's delayed, at least here in the U.S. So, yeah. I mean, that's still the one. We were talking about it this morning, too. Like, we're going to pick up a 1-gigabyte model just to try it and see. But, I mean, for my money, spend the extra $40. You know, it's $220 when you're out the door. Spend the extra $40 and just don't worry about it. I get that it's not
available. For storage as much as RAM, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, this is not much of anything these days.
No, yeah. I think that, unfortunately, that's going to be misaligned with Motorola is probably going to be producing more of the 1 gig, 8 gig models just for the world, because that's where the Moto G hits well, is under $200. But so you might be waiting a little bit, but it'll be worth it.
So that's that.
It's a good question.
It was a very good question. Actually, I had one in email I wanted to read too. Let me find it real quick.
Just front load all the questions.
Yes.
You just go straight into the Q&A. Just whatever.
Maybe we'll even do some, Patrick wants to know, my wife and I need new phones. She's stuck in a Galaxy S3 and I'm on original Moto X. Wow. That's impressive. We are taking our two adorable girls to Disney World in November, and we need to take great pictures, especially in low light. I don't necessarily want to spend a fortune on two phones, so I was looking at new budget phones. Which ones take the best pictures, and how do they really compare to the GS6 and the G4? I am actually impressed with the Moto G camera, and frankly, you're going to be impressed by anything coming from phones that old. It's
oh god, huge, the original huge, Moto X camera.
Yeah, huge leaps in technology since back then.
I think it depends on your definition of budget, right? Doesn't it?
Yep.
Of the current crop, there are a lot of mid-range phones that are more expensive than the G that don't take pictures anywhere near as good as it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what you would get.
The Zenfone 2 has a pretty good camera. Not as great in low light, but it has like the open it up, snap a picture, and it looks quite good. You know, and that's starting at $199.
And besides that, I guess you'd be looking at maybe year old like LG phones, maybe the G3, mm-hmm. maybe still pretty decent.
G3 camera is very respectable.
Again, kind of, a good year and a half into its lifespan now, but still.
Note 4, if you can get it cheapish.
Note 4 has a great camera as well.
Yeah, same sensor as the GS6.
Yeah. Those, I mean, and look, I mean, the Moto G, it's a cheap camera. It's not going to be great in low light. I can, almost promise that.
Yeah.
Certainly compared to the other ones.
You could just buy a $200 point and shoot and it'll smash any budget phone for $200.
The Sonys.
Yeah. Still and really it'll have a nice flash on it and everything too. If you're going to be, taking pictures while you're in, the cave of some ride at Disneyland or something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I tell you what. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will get knee deep into Andrew. What are you holding there? What phones do you have? Show us your toys. That's a GS6. Damn, nope. Nice GS6.
Yeah, I know, right? And oh my gosh, this one's all the way down here. And then I have another black version too of the. Which one is which? You don't even know.
I was going to say.
I feel like Andrew's phones need their own lower thirds.
Yeah. You don't even know. I mean, the Verizon logo. Dang it.
Yep.
That'll tell you which one that one is. But.
All right, we come back. We're going to talk about the Note 5. At this point, everyone understands that in the right situations, open source software is important technology. It's useful and it's powerful. No one really disagrees with that. I mean, the most successful open source project of all time is a little thing called the internet. Maybe you've heard of it. Tim Berners-Lee put the www in the public domain. Then, of course, there's Berkeley Unix, TCP/IP, BSD Linux, Android, the Internet of Things. You get the picture. The only real disagreement is whether open source can be used in an enterprise situation to do the most important work. Well, Red Hat has been settling this debate one customer at a time for more than a decade. They started with Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and today they certify and support application development, storage, and cloud infrastructure for every conceivable enterprise deployment. The New York Stock Exchange, DreamWorks, each and every airline, healthcare company, and telecom giant in the Fortune Global 500, they all rely on Red Hat. In fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 are Red Hat customers. Why? Because they get the powerful, constantly improving innovation of open source without the risk of having to do it alone. It's that simple. Red Hat, enterprise software trusted in the world's most demanding data centers. Find out what they can do for yours at redhat.com. I mean, honestly, those all look the same to me.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. All right, so this week we had dual events, simultaneous events. Were they simultaneous? How close was it?
They were different. Close. I mean, different announcements, right, which we'll get into later. But yeah, they both started pretty much on time, which isn't always the case. So good job on that, I guess.
So we had Andrew and Joey in New York.
Uh-huh.
And Alex and Richard were in London. So what did we get, Andrew? What did we get?
Well, we got a Note 5, as everybody...
We got a Note 5. You got a Note 5.
We in the freedom-loving United States got a Note 5. And
America.
Yeah, which everybody was expecting. And then also... You know, this long string of rumors of a Galaxy S6 Plus ended up turning into a Galaxy S6 Edge Plus, which is just a Galaxy S6 Edge, but bigger. So the more interesting...
Is it a Galaxy Note 5, only flatter or rounder?
Well, it's the same amount of round. It's just on the front instead of the back.
Okay.
You think about it.
Sorry, so continue.
The Note 5 is the more interesting one, but they're really positioning this as two phones that are, they're saying, one big choice. So they just assume that you want to buy either one of these, but all you have to do is choose between the Note 5 and the S6 Edge Plus.
And just so you know, the irony of that one big choice is not lost on me.
Yeah. So we'll get to that too. But they're the same internally, pretty much the same externally. The big difference is that the Note 5 has a flat screen and an S Pen, and the S6 Edge Plus has a curved screen and no S Pen. I mean, that's really the only difference that you're looking at between these two phones. And in themselves, they're pretty much the same as the Galaxy S6. I mean, we're only talking about 6 months removed from the GS6. They have the same camera, same processor, basically same design, same screen technology, slightly larger batteries, same fingerprint sensor. I mean, the only big changes are a couple of software tweaks and an extra gigabyte of RAM.
We're talking, what, 15% more battery, I think?
Yeah, so 3,000 milliamp hours in this versus 2550 in the S6. And the size difference is notable, I guess. But, I mean, really, these are just... Samsung is kind of banking on, so we're going to, they're saying, we're going to assume you want a Galaxy S6. Now, pick whether you want the Edge screen on the side, and then pick which size you want. And they have, you know, they have this quadrant of phones where you can choose them and you get the same experience on all four, basically.
And you still have a bunch of unique stuff with the S Pen, though, right? That's
right,
still there, and that's...
When you choose to get, you know, you choose the flat screen, you get the S Pen, and it's, you know, it's the same usual stuff. You get S Note, you get to annotate PDFs, you get Air Command where you can manage these windows and all the writing apps. You know, there are different note taking apps and things like that. But, you know, if you're an S Pen person, you know you're an S Pen person, I suppose.
All right, I'm not, but I'm still kind of excited about the Note 5. Why?
Right. So the Note 5, honestly, it's all about this design. It's so much easier to hold than the Note 4. It's hilarious how much better it is. So it has this curved glass on the back instead of the front, which makes a world of difference in that you can rest it in your hand and like your fingers can actually wrap around it, where the Note 4 has these really sharp edges and this slick plastic on the back. This is thinner, narrower, and shorter than the Note 4, while also having a better ergonomic curve to the side, and the bezels on the thing are absolutely tiny.
It's almost like they read, I think I wrote it back when they first teased the silhouette of the 6 Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I wonder, is that going to be the back of the device? And I was like, there's no way that curve can be on the front. That's just going to feel weird. And turns out it doesn't kind of feel weird. But
the curve on the back is just, it's just the same as the curve on the front. It's the exact same piece of glass. It's just on the other side.
So, the thing I noticed about the S6 Edge Plus, obviously that's the new one we've got in the UK, is that holding it up next to the G4, which I brought with me yesterday, the actual width of it, which is the important thing when you talk about ease of use and ease of holdability and stuff, is actually almost identical to the G4, which...
Yeah, the width is like within 0.1 millimeters or something. It's almost the exact same.
Yeah.
And it's just a couple millimeters taller. It's thinner than the G4, a couple millimeters taller, but also has a bigger screen. So the screen to body ratio is higher on the Edge Plus and the Note 4. And I'm not a big fan of the ergonomics of the G4, but the Note 5 really feels easier to hold and, manipulate, reach across.
So you've used the regular GSX Edge more than I have. And the thing that kind of struck me about going to the larger size of that and the Edge Plus is that almost because it is a bigger phone, the areas that you have to grip onto, the joins aren't as sharp. And whether that's just because of the size or because of design changes, who knows? But the way I remembered the original Edge was that it was kind of, you had these very sharp corners digging into your hand. And that seemed to be less of a thing with the new one. Is that something you've noticed?
Yeah, it's interesting. A few different people at the event said that as well. This is the same design. It's literally the exact same design as the S6 Edge. It's just scaled up. And now if that means that your fingers land on it a little differently or something, maybe that's the case. But you can see there that the metal on the sides is a little thicker, because everything's stretched out in every proportion. So there is a little more metal on the side than on the original S6 Edge, and that maybe helps with not feeling like it's, a sharp edge cutting into your hand. I'm not really sure. I've used the S6 Edge a lot, and I'm not a big fan of the design, so it'll be interesting to see how the larger one pans out, but I'm immediately gravitating towards the Note 5 ergonomically.
Now, Alex, why are you so upset about the Note 5? What's wrong?
I'm not particularly massively upset about the Note 5. I think it's a weird decision for Samsung. What we're talking about is the fact that the Note 5 is not coming to Europe anytime soon. The official line is no plans to launch it in the UK in 2015 or in Europe in 2015. So basically, don't get your hopes up. You'll be able to import one, of course. There'll be international models in other places that you can import. But in terms of being able to walk into a store and get one easily, in terms of being able to get one on contracts, it's not happening probably until next year.
What's wrong with your people?
Wow, okay. So the official line was the statement from Samsung was along the lines of better meeting the needs of European customers, which is kind of a very vague way of saying...
you don't deserve it.
Well,
you're not worthy.
What we hear on the grapevine is that basically their market research showed that people were using the Note not necessarily for the pen, but for the larger screen, for the multitasking features, and that presumably this was specific to Europe more so than other territories. And so they figured, right, we're just going to give you the S6 Edge Plus. And
you'll like it
because... Yeah, it's weird because the whole Note thing has been very kind of European from the beginning, right? It's always launched at IFA. It's always been, you see, like you do in every country, really. I think you see loads and loads of Notes out there, just as many as the Galaxy S6 and S5s these days.
I think you're taking it personally because this was always like your event, your device, your time of year.
A little bit, yeah. And I used the Note 4 a lot. It's just weird. It doesn't really make any sense in terms of like the Note brand as a global brand, in terms of you've had people on the Note 3 and now the Note 4 going into a new cycle expecting there to be a new Note because there's just always been a new Note. And now you're going to have, because you have this thing called the internet where people from different territories can communicate with each other, you're going to have people who are very much aware of the Note 5, aware of the new features with the S Pen, the new design, maybe aren't fans of the the Edge screen or whatever. They want this new Note, but they're going to be aware of the fact that they can't get it. Not so much your average consumer going to a carrier store. They'll be, you know, pushed towards the Edge Plus or whatever. But it's just, yeah, I don't see how they couldn't have foreseen that there would be this backlash against it.
It's especially odd because it really breaks down their current messaging, like I said, where they have this quadrant and they say you want big or small, you want flat or curved. And it's just odd because now if somebody says, oh, I like the GS6, but I want a larger screen, you know, even without the S Pen, whatever, now they have to get the one with the curved edges, which they may not like. And it's not like Samsung can't scale and make these devices. They're making a crap ton of them for every other region.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't to do with Samsung not making money on the Note in Europe or not thinking it's worth putting it out there. I think,
sure.
Like I said, it was part of it was their market research, you know, rightly or wrongly. The other part of it would have been supposedly the Edge has been selling better in general, just, you know, way more than Samsung thought it would. So they don't necessarily want to release these two right at the same time and have one eating into sales of the other. Like I said, the wording was very specific on the statement saying no plans to launch in 2015. So, you know, what happens in 2016, who knows?
Russell, everything you've heard now, I mean, does this take care of some of your issues with the GS6 Edge?
You know, not really. In fact, it kind of enhanced some of the issues that I had. I walked into a Best Buy last night and put my hands on the Note 5. And the curved back really just made me hate the Edge display on the S6 Edge more. Just be like,
the curved back is nice. It's really nice.
I use the S6 Edge all the time. It's been my daily driver for a little while now, and it's okay in a case, but outside of a case, I'm really I'm to a point now where I'm uncomfortable using it because dropping it is just something that will happen eventually, and I'm just terrified of what's going to happen when it hits the ground. I did not feel that way with the larger Note 5. It felt really comfortable in my hand. The curve back, the fact that I could wrap my fingers around the sides when I was holding it and using it. And, you know, when I went back immediately to the S6 Edge, it just made that phone feel all the more fragile and uncomfortable. So I can only imagine what the S6 Edge Plus feels like when holding it.
Yeah, it's weird. I kind of got what you were saying about the S6 Edge Plus, and actually going back to using that at MWC for the first time, you kind of go backwards and back and forth on which one is the easier one to hold. I mean, my thing was that the regular GS6 was a little bit just the softer metal at the sides meant that you couldn't really grip onto it as easily as the harder corners of the Edge, and that's something I kind of see with the Plus as well, because it's not excessively wide. You can kind of grip onto the metal at the side.
Maybe, yeah, I mean, weird.
I don't know.
No, so I mean, you're right, and if I'm sitting down, the corners are really nice, the way that they rest in my hand, and that's something that, you know, especially when using the G4, the corners on the G4 or the corners on the OnePlus 2, you come back to the S6 Edge and you really appreciate how soft those the corners are when it comes to the phone resting in your hand, and that's cool, but I can't. Maybe it's just my fingers, but I'm uncomfortable holding the phone like that when I'm walking around. Like, I wind up gripping the middle part instead of letting it rest in my hand. And that's where I feel like I'm going to drop it. So it's weird switching back and forth, I guess.
Are we to the point where we can just admit that LG did it right with the crazy buttons on the back?
No. I love the crazy buttons on the back. But
Andrew said no,
but
he's wrong.
You know I'll never admit that.
I'm okay with that.
That's just me, I guess.
I'm trying to think. What else did we get from Samsung? We got a teaser.
Tab S2.
A what?
Tab S2.
Tab S2.
Let's look at that. It was announced a while back, but we actually got to play with it in London. I'm not sure if it was at the New York event. But, you know, kind of a...
No,
kind
they
of
didn't.
Successor to,
they didn't talk about it at all in the US, which is funky.
Yeah. I mean, like I say, it was announced kind of quietly a few weeks back. So, yeah, this, I think, was the first time we actually got a proper look at it. And it's nice. It's kind of the design is kind of halfway between the Note 4 and the GS6 line. You have similar kinds of kind of angular cutouts, if you want to call them that, along the sides. And this mix of metal and plastic design. The body and back is very much a plastic kind of thing. But you do have the metal chamfers around the edge, which are kind of a step up from where we were last year with the Tab S, and that being very much a plastic design.
We got a tease of a new Gear S watch, the Gear S2. It's round, like proper round, like an actual circle, and not Samsung's, hey, it's round with the square body, but it's round. No, it's not.
Or Motorola's round with a notch out of the bottom.
Yeah, it looks nice.
It does look nice. And there was some obfuscation in the weird kind of pictures that they were taking with the women who were holding it. Mm-hmm. But it actually looks like it might work with slender wrists as well.
I mean, you compare that to the Gear S and it looking like either like a some kind of prop from a sci-fi movie or something that you'd wear on your ankle after getting let out of jail.
Oh. Did it's you? Just, you well, hang like on, hang on. Alex wins right there with that. comparing a device to an ankle monitor. Wow. It's
just about as less user-friendly as well.
Bravo.
You can't miss the fact that you're wearing a Gear S. It looks big and weird on small wrists. I think that's maybe the thing they were trying to convey with
it the big and weird on every wrist.
Well, yeah, except, pretty much.
Except the guy who gets bitten in half in Jurassic World.
Oh, no, that was a Gear 2, though.
Spoiler.
Oh, that's right, you're right. Everyone, like, come on, someone gets bitten in half in a Jurassic Park movie. Total wow. Spoiler.
I know, that was the joke. We're going to see more of this watch. We're going to see more of this watch in IFA. And by the way, speaking of watches, Motorola maybe teased what's going to be the next 360. Maybe. We'll see.
Button's in a different place. So there's that.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the button is. So the button is not on the side. It's up a little bit. And that's the exact same place where the Huawei Watch's button is.
In different lugs. But
so when you think about not having to move your hand like this, it's more like that up on top, which makes sense, I suppose, because you're not winding it. You're using it as an interaction button.
Right. It's almost exactly the same angle now that I'm looking.
And you've got to imagine that a button up there is going to be easier to get to than...
Oh, absolutely. Right, you don't have to twist your wrist on your other hand to pinch there.
And my most favoritest, most exciting thing about the little teaser video was that it didn't say "Okay, Google."
Okay, Moto.
The voice command thing. It was "Okay, Moto." If Moto actions come to the watch, that would make me 10 kinds of happy.
That'd be some really cool stuff. Speaking of new things coming. Samsung Pay, we got some more details on that, sort of, yes?
Absolutely. They finally were willing to talk about Samsung Pay for real, which I think Russell talked about this at first when they first talked about it at MWC. Like, they talked about Samsung Pay coming immediately after they acquired Loop Pay, where it was very clear that they were not ready to talk about the details of Samsung Pay. And so now we're 6 months further ahead on it. They've done a consumer... the beta test trial in South Korea, which they wouldn't tell us about what the results were. They just know that it happened. It sounds like they were very hands-off and they just let a bank handle it because, the banks have to be happy with how it works as well. But so they're finally happy with it enough to do a trial in the U.S. in August and then for real in at the end of September, which is right around the corner.
I'm kind of excited about this. We've heard about this for a while. I like that they're combining NFC with this, kind of current technology for accessing the terminals that are available, because there are a ton of NFC terminals around me. There are very few terminals around me that play nice with Google Wallet or Apple Pay for that matter. It ends up being a lot of times more trouble than it's worth. But almost everywhere I go, those little terminals are there that have just the regular card reader. And if it works the way that it's supposed to, that's something I would end up using way more than Wallet.
So, yeah, they're really selling this. So Samsung Pay, the reason why they bought Loop Pay was because Loop Pay has this system where you can just hold the phone up alongside where you would normally slide your credit card, and it'll emulate that sliding and yay, just Megatron. Pass it over. So that's the system, and they're really playing that up, and they're pretty much saying it does NFC, but that's completely secondary to this MST technology that lets it emulate a credit card swipe and work. They keep saying on virtually everywhere that takes credit cards, because they, you know, you can never guarantee it'll work on 100% of machines, but LootPay is pretty well known for, you know, having the technology that works right there.
There is the difference, I think, between something working and something being accepted, right? I mean, we go back to a couple of weeks ago talking about Russell's experience in that cab in New York City. And if you're walking up to just a regular terminal and waving your phone at it and things are happening seemingly by magic, there are going to be several people who are just kind of freaked out by that and think that you're, you know, hacking things or stealing money or whatever.
Right.
Something has to educate people.
The difference here is that the way that this transaction happens, it's a secure token transaction, which wallet didn't originally do. And so the secure token transaction is going to make it actually look like a card when it goes through, like a card with its own number and its own set of variables. So when it comes out of the printer, it's going to look weird. You're totally right. And there's going to be a couple of people who are going to go, what sorcery is this? But when the receipt comes out of the machine, it's not going to say MasterCard with four zeros like you just hacked the Matrix. And so that's right. That's going to be a functional difference there. So it may not be quite so bad. But if someone chases you down the street with a tire iron, hit me up via email. That's a funny story.
But it is the point that the issue is not the technology here. We know that they know how to do this, and they've shown us demo after demo, and I could talk about that in a minute and how that works. But the issue is the culture around it, where already have so much issue with, you know, paying with your phone from the cashier just doesn't know what the heck's going on standpoint. And now we have an additional thing where it looks even more hacky that you're putting your phone where a credit card should be on top of it, and you just kind of look like an idiot at first because you're just like, hey, I'm going to put my phone here and I swear it's going to work. Of course, on the other end, it at least authenticates. But I think it looks even weirder than having, because NFC terminals right now are at least a separate thing up top. Like, that's where you put your phone. This is, it looks like you're hacking the machine.
If anyone has the money or the marketing power to educate people, if you like, as to how this is actually a real payment thing, and you're not hacking the Matrix, then it's probably Samsung.
Excited! I'm gonna load up the beta. I'm gonna walk to the liquor store right down the street from my house at like 1:30 in the morning, and I'm gonna try and pay for stuff with my phone by like rubbing it on the side of this thing. And the guy's just gonna look at me and be like, dude.
Well, I'm sure
the payment's going to go through, and I'm just going to look at him and be like, what? Give me my drinks.
So this is the way it works, basically, is they just have a very simple app where you can do the thing where you can just scan the card. Well, that's thunder. But you can scan the card, and it, you know, enters all the stuff. You just put in the secure, you know, CVV code or whatever on the back. And so you just do a swipe up on your lock screen from the home button. You just swipe up and it pulls up the card interface where it just shows a depiction of the card. You just swipe through them. You put your fingerprint on, you know, finger on the home button, and you have 15 seconds to then set it on the terminal. Otherwise it times out and you have to re-authenticate, and then it's done. It's just finished. It doesn't take, you don't have to swipe your phone on it. You don't even have to get it on the machine. You just have to get it within a few millimeters of it, you know, just hover it over, and it'll just authenticate right away. Now, of course, I was using it on a Samsung demonstration device, but it was a very standard little, you know, the one with the pin pad on it. It's I think a Verifone thing. You see them in every major department store or whatever. And then just, like Russell said, it prints out a normal receipt that says, you know, authenticated, and gives a little card number and everything like that. It works nicely, and they don't hand over, unlike things like currency and whatever, they're not handing over any information. There's not like a revenue share. There's not a data share between the Samsung and the company. It just gives them a payment token that says, yes, they authenticated it, and then you just go on with your life.
While Andrew was in the air coming home last night, though, we all started talking about all the places where we pay for things, you know, every day, that this just isn't going to be feasible whatsoever.
Right. I think about, I mean, of course, in Europe, they're very, you know, because chip and pin cards, they're always bringing you a little card reader. And so you could just set your phone on that and do the card reader. But in the U.S.
Canada is the same way.
They bring you a little folio, you put your credit card in it, and then they take it away and they charge. And there's not a single restaurant that's going to say, you know, they're going to be okay with you saying, hey, let me just walk with you over to the backside of the restaurant and just swipe this on your terminal. Like, nobody's going to allow that.
I'm not writing down your number at all. Don't worry about me.
So there, I mean, of course, we prefer this secure system. I mean, even convenience aside, it's so much more secure than having this credit card that anybody could take and use or take the numbers or anything like that. But, you know, think about all the stores in which you hand, even when you're just at the point of sale, you hand a credit card across the counter. They're not leaving with your credit card like in a restaurant, but they're swiping your card for you. I mean, think about fast food restaurants where you're always handing them the card or through a drive-thru, or think about if you're at a metro station or a vending machine where there's not a card swiper. It's a card, you know, push your card into this machine and pull it out. You know, this technology doesn't work with that, even in self-service situations.
So I think part of it is kind of a regional thing. I mean, a few of the things you mentioned are like less prevalent in Europe. Right? I mean, we've had chip and pin for longer, so a lot of the places where you would in the old days hand your card over, you do just have a terminal that is, you know, just in front of you that you can use, and that's the same in the UK and same in most parts of Europe. So maybe when we see it launching in other places, it will be easier to get traction there. But yeah, like you mentioned, the US, there are a lot of these barriers that are still, you know, you would quite happily hand your card over, you would not, you know, either go with the person or just give them your phone.
Right. And I think that, of course, things like the vending machine and, you know, like a metro station or something, those things can be alleviated a little bit by NFC because they have, you know, they can have a little tap zone. But, you know, there are lots of situations where you're putting your card lengthwise in a machine and then pulling it back out. It's not a swipe anyway. So those, you know, you're completely out on those too. And the nice thing about Samsung Pay is it's not just credit cards, not just debit cards. You can have gift cards, you can have loyalty cards, you can have all these cards in there, which presumably will let you slim down your wallet or leave your wallet at home. But I rarely have a day or a group of days that don't go by where this just physically would not work at, you know, because of the restaurants and the different situations. And that's a big issue.
And that's not to say there aren't times when it wouldn't be convenient as hell, because they're going to be those. But I mean, the question is, how does it balance out against the times where it's just not convenient?
Right. I mean, it's one of those things where it was the same
vending machine, parking meter, awesome. Restaurants, not good. Well, which one do I use more? You know?
Right. And there's just the problem is there's a different solution for each one of these things, and a lot of them are completely out of Samsung's control. Even with education, they're just not going to get every metro station in a city to swap out their machines for ones that have NFC or have a swiping card that you can put up against. And at that point, you're asking people to bring a credit card anyway, so then they're just going to keep using that. It's the same situation we had with Google Wallet in the beginning, or Google Wallet, you know, as of yesterday, is that, you know, unless you can use it 100% of the time, it's not as useful to a lot of people. And, you know, even when you're at 90% adoption, it's still the fact that you have that last 10% means that you're still carrying your wallet.
So where does Android Pay stand in all this? I mean, now we have Apple Pay, we have Samsung Pay, we have Android Pay.
Of course.
Are all of these places going to accept these same things? Is it going to be dependent on that?
Well, the nice thing about Android Pay and Apple Pay is that they're going to help push adoption of NFC. So you'll at least be able to have, you know, or all three of these are compatible with NFC. Samsung has the one where it will do the magnetic stripe as well. But that just means there are more places that are more used to people putting their phone on the terminal and having it do things. And that helps everybody out. And we've already seen that, you know, you get more people out there using that kind of technology, and all of a sudden there's the clerk at Whole Foods who sees every third person come through and put their phone on the thing, and they're not baffled by it at all. And that's just a normal thing. Now the problem is it's going to take years and years and years of that happening before it's in the normal, you know, the normal activities of people paying for things and not just a one-off thing. And like I said, you don't want to have that doubt that it'll work when you go in there to pay for something, especially if you've left your wallet at home and you're standing there with $20 worth of stuff at the convenience store trying to buy and it won't go through.
So let's change gears real quick. We've got this crazy keyboard case thing for the Note 5 as well.
Yes, the keyboard case.
Did you get one?
No, I did not. Oh. Get one. I'm actually really unhappy that I didn't get one.
Samsung.
And I will get one because I want to try it. It was funny when we looked at the thing. They had all these cases laid out, and I walked over there, you know, because they didn't talk about it before, and I was like, "Wait, is that a keyboard on the case?" Like, "Oh yeah, we made a keyboard case." Like, whatever, like it was just another case. And they were like, yes, we heard some people want physical keyboards. And so here's the thing. So it's just a plain old like plastic case like this. You click it on the back and there's a front plate that will meet up to it in the front that gives you a, you know, a BlackBerry style keyboard that it probably covers up, yeah, about that much of the phone. And it just shifts the UI up. You know, it's as if it had the physical keyboard attached all the time. And it clicks on there where you now get a physical home button that pushes down the home button underneath it, and back and multitasking buttons that just push on the buttons underneath them. So,
Andrew, I have a serious question. No. I need you to listen to this carefully.
I'm listening.
Why do you hate yourself?
No, I don't. But I hate myself enough that I want to try this keyboard because the most interesting thing is that there's no Bluetooth here. There's no battery here.
That's
not
interesting. That's wrong.
It's capacitive.
Oh my God.
You know, the only way that this works is if it's just a dumb piece of plastic.
It is.
If you can just choose to use it or not use it.
Don't.
As soon as you have to start like charging your keyboard case separately and
once
all that,
a month,
then it's just crap. So, well, that's assuming that, you know, the speed and accuracy is all good and things like that.
It won't be.
It won't be.
It might be.
I don't think it will be. But the only cool thing is it's just completely optional. You can, even when you're using it, you can unclip it and clip it on the back. So it's just part of the case now. The problem is, you know, we've given up on this idea of the hardware keyboard. And even when it's integrated into the phone and when it's a secondary thing, you're starting to care about it less and less. And they're charging $80 for this case.
And meanwhile, Alex is all,
I want one.
Look, I mean, I think I'm kind of over the keyboard case at this point. I don't know. I think it's, look, it's ridiculous on the face of it, right? It's easy to make fun of. It's a keyboard that you stick to the front of your phone. It's ridiculous. It's a way of turning your shiny new Galaxy Note Edge.
But there's a gold one.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Good.
I'm not as appalled at this as some people are.
Yeah.
I think it's just another case. Samsung makes the most ridiculous cases that like flip all over the place and give you a little window in the front that you can take low res one by one pictures on with the case on it and crap like that with fake leather stitching on it. And you're upset by this keyboard case.
I mean, look, on the grand scale of Samsung ridiculousness as exists in my head, there is this keyboard down here and maybe the Note Edge last year with its ruler is kind of somewhere up here. I feel like this isn't really,
this is the company that made the Note Edge, guys. So I think it's crazy that they have it, and I don't think they're going to make or sell that many of them. But it seems to be executed well for what it is, and you can at least give them that, I suppose. And they're going to make it available for the regular S6 and S6 Edge as well, which might get a little cramped. But again, $80 cases, there's them's good margins.
I want to use it, and I want to try and write all of my articles for a week on it.
Well, and that's the,
see if I can.
The biggest thing is it kills the usable amount of the screen by so much. that it might not be worth it.
It kills the usable amount of the screen by the exact same amount that that the virtual keyboard does. Don't give me that.
But it's there all the time.
Until it's not, when you take it off and snap it onto the back.
It's just such a ridiculous inconvenience. It's awesome.
All right. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to...
keyboard cases.
We're going to hope that Russell has come to his senses. We're going to hope that Alex hasn't thrown himself off a cliff. We're going to talk briefly about this Google Alphabet thing. Then we're going to finish up with some Q&A. So hang on. We'll be right back. Shaving can be a pain. It's uncomfortable, it can cause razor burn and nicks, and on top of that, it can be outrageously expensive. Well, Harry's.com can help with that. Harry's is about half the price of other big branded blades, and they ship for free right to your front doorstep. And they're better, too. The first blades were made in Germany, and they liked them so much that Harry's just bought the entire factory there. So why would you ever pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades ever again? It's half the price at Harry's, and with Harry's, you get a better shave that respects your skin and your face and your legs, anywhere really, but especially your wallet. No more poor quality blades. No more plexiglass cabinets to unlock either. And it's an even smarter deal if you don't shave every day. Have an exquisite beard like me, or maybe Jerry? Well, you'll save that much more money with Harry's. Plus, you can't beat having everything delivered right to your door. And once you get things inside, you'll be surprised just how good everything looks and how good it makes you feel. And the starter set is an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and 3 razor blades. And be sure to use the promo code AC when you check out so you can get $5 off your first order. Men, women, cats, dogs, babies, shave all the things, really. But we all need razors that shave well and don't suck. Check out Harry's.com and be sure to use the promo code AC at checkout.
Ooh, lightning.
What happens after lightning?
I'll tell you in a few seconds.
You guys haven't tried it yet, by the way. This stuff is amazing.
What is it?
Not your father's root beer.
Huh.
If you like the taste of root beer, this is like, it's an ale that is brewed in a similar fashion. It's so good.
Coming up after the break, we discuss root beer.
Yep.
Sounds wonderful, actually.
Should totally do that 1 week. We'll just review like food and drink and stuff.
5.9% alcohol by volume. It's not bad.
Start a whole new podcast. Google Alphabet. So I tell you, this one kind of dropped out of nowhere. I love it when big companies can surprise us, by the way. I know I'm not supposed to say that. I'm supposed to want to leak all the things, but I love it when stuff like this just drops and everybody's like, "Ugh."
Especially when I'm driving home from Eastern Washington for 3 hours.
I had one leg out the door of the office.
Completely reorganized their company while I can't look at my phone for 3 hours.
Larry Page is just like, "Hey, so we're kind of getting bored a little bit, or we're not just bored, but we got to do a lot of stuff because we're CEO of Google again. And I don't want to do that anymore. So we're going to make a whole new company and I'm going to run that and I'm going to let Sundar take over Google." And everyone's like, "All right, okay, what's this new company called?" "Alphabet." And then everyone just kind of sat there for a minute. And they're like, "No, really, what's it called?" "Alphabet."
So it makes a whole lot of sense when you think that these are the same, Larry and Sergey are the same guys who brought in Eric Schmidt to just be the CEO, because at that time they were like, "We don't want to deal with the day-to-day CEO stuff. We're going to bring in Eric Schmidt. He's going to do that, and we're going to go do fun things," which, you know, making all these different projects and pulling Google in all these different directions. And now they get to continue to do that just at this higher level with Alphabet, while Google and all the things that make sense together and make a whole boatload of money are all in, you know, in the Google world, and they can break out all these other companies that do crazy stuff that now won't be hitting Google's financials in the same way as well. They can talk, they can see where all the money is made, and they can better appropriate it to all these different groups. And, you know, there gets to be a bunch of new CEOs and things like that too.
Makes total sense. I like the idea. I still think Wall Street just does a lot of dumb things, but what do I know?
So, I mean, the big thing is that from a consumer's standpoint, we still care about what Google's doing, and we think about, you know, Google releases the Nexus device. It's not going to be the Alphabet Nexus now. You know, Alphabet's not a user-facing, consumer-facing company. And
that's kind of a shame, I think, watching people defend the Alphabet Nexus in our forums would be kind of funny.
The ABC Next.
Well, and they have the ABC.xyz URL now.
That was a great, great URL for that. I like that. It was fun watching people freak out about, you know, they don't have the Twitter handle, and then some fake ones popped up, and it's just like, I it's not, whatever, it doesn't matter.
And then what about abc.wtf URL?
Oh, I didn't see that one.
It takes you to Bing.
Oh, really?
That was a pretty sweet troll.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's...
There's not much else to say.
Yeah,
They reorganized the company. They could have done the very same thing with just a internal Google reorg to readjust the way that things are laid out and better silo these different, you know, projects and things. You know, that way Nest no longer comes in as a Google company. You know, it'll just be Nest, and it happens to be owned by the same company that owns Google.
Can you imagine that popping up on your phone when it boots up? Powered by Alphabet.
Google, an Alphabet company.
Yeah, Alphabet.
Kind of funny to imagine if Motorola was still in the Google camp, where that would fall in that whole scheme of things.
They would be spun off and just die, probably. I mean, you have to think this was the company that still sold off Motorola after losing a nice chunk of money every quarter. So, I mean, Google's not, you know, they're not immune to just losing money for fun. But yeah, they trim the bad stuff when they see necessary.
Yep.
So, I mean, the other big part of that news is obviously new CEO of Google.
Yeah.
Sundar Pichai, who's been around the Chrome team for a while, going back to 2004, I think.
Yeah, he's been senior vice president of products for a while now. And, yeah, and very much the
puppy going from Chrome to then taking over Android, and then now, of course, CEO. So, I mean, my sort of quick take on it was that it kind of reflects where Google is now in 2015 going into the next 5 or 10 years, what is important to them. Obviously, search is still crucially important, but now the two platforms are the main thing, right, in terms of the future of Google. Search and advertising is still really important from a money-making perspective, but, like, the bigger strategic side of things seem to be, it's all platforms now. It's all maintaining those. Those are the things that are going to keep Google collecting data and making money off advertising through getting people using these products.
I loved watching everybody, like, have their long think pieces out, you know, 12, 24 hours later. Like, that's it. We know everything there is to know. It's done. Well played, Google. No. And it's like, no, this is going to go on for a while, guys.
And, I mean, it's not that crazy to think that Larry didn't want to keep sitting in on extremely boring meetings about ad revenue from partner sites.
There are... And
he had other more important things that he...
There are legal things you have to do when you're CEO of a company, and I could very much see, you know, the moonshot thinkers not wanting to do that. Yeah.
Exactly, and if you've ever read anything about Larry Page, you know he's that kind of person, right? He's all about the big projects. He's all about, on the one side, having this big advertising machinery of Google to make money to be able to do the cool stuff, but it's the moonshots, and it's those kind of projects of Google X and whatnot that really interest him.
Yeah, he trusts that somebody else can do that other more mundane stuff where he goes and does the other interesting things, which is, I think, completely understandable.
So that's all I got on that. Anything else? We miss anything this week?
Russell has a OnePlus 2.
That How happened.
Is it? Still liking it?
Yeah, you know, it's not bad. It's got some weirdness to it every once in a while. The Wi-Fi firmware is not 100%.
Well, but see, that sort of thing's going to settle as time goes on, so.
The speaker on it is not great. I would go so far as to call it garbage, as a matter of fact.
I did, in fact,
go so far as to call it garbage. Mm-hmm. Not a big fan of the speaker. Camera seems really nice. The battery life seems right around on par with the G4, based on my usage. But I'm also not on a U.S. model with U.S. LTE networks, so that may not be something worth talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll hang on for more on that, I think.
Mm-hmm. I don't hate USB-C as much as I thought I was going
really?
To.
Really? Even though it's not really USB-C or really USB 3?
I mean, like the physical port
itself. Hey, hang on. There's Andrew. Yep.
Go on.
And I think a lot of it had been because I hadn't actually touched a USB-C port yet. I didn't realize that it's actually longer. The pin itself is longer and wider than micro USB. So it goes deeper into the device, and there's this really satisfying click when it snaps into the phone that I really like.
This podcast is not safe for work now.
That's kind of the thing about Lightning, is that it's a really, on the iPhone, it's a really small pin, and you feel like it's just resting in the phone rather than
it's flimsy,
Yeah, very, very small and flimsy.
Whereas this, it goes into the phone and it clicks into place, and once it clicks into place, like, it doesn't wiggle around. It's really kind of impressive. It's weird to think about it. I don't care at all about the fact that it's infinitely reversible. You still have to look at it to plug it in. Anyone who disagrees with me is wrong.
Damn. All right, then. We'll have more on that coming up. Not today. Not on this show. On a different show. We'll have us to talk about it later.
I'll actually have, I think next week I'm going to talk more about using it on a regular basis, because by next week I will have multiple USB-C devices in the house to mess with.
What else do you have coming?
I can't talk to you about it until next week.
Oh, okay. Like, I mean, have you told me what it is? Am I supposed to know? Oh, I wasn't paying attention.
It's okay.
Well, now I want to know what it is. Tell me later.
Having 5 Chromebook Pixels.
I just have an array of Chromebook Pixels around me.
Phil, you remember how you gave me your credit card number? Don't worry about it.
It's already in the Google Store, so there you go.
All right, Tomer wants to know, what are your thoughts about the new Chromebooks announced by Dell? These are enterprise Chromebooks.
I want one so bad.
Yeah, they're exciting. They look nice, kind of like a rugged look to them.
Because it's good. It's supposed to be an enterprise level one, just like we've seen with the education ones. They're kind of a little more rough and tumble kind of style, just, you know, flat black plastic, but we're talking $400 because you can get up to 8 gigs of RAM, full HD IPS display, backlit keyboard, Core i5. You know, these are the specs that, you know, and the higher end build quality we've been asking for. You know, something that's $400 instead of a cheap one that's $250 that doesn't feel as nice.
I saw a picture this week, a whole bunch of schools here, I think all the way through high school, got a whole bunch of Chromebooks this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, and those big carts that they all plug into. And
oh, those carts are weird. They put them in my kid's school this past year, and when they're sealed, it's like this giant metal vault on wheels.
Yep.
It's so bizarre. Hmm. But I guess it's the best way to do it, unless someone decides to wheel the entire cart out of the school.
Well, they did those in my old school district as well, except for it wasn't Chromebooks back then. It was like, you know, 7-pound Dell laptops, and right. You know, this makes so much more sense, especially in an elementary school, middle school. You know, kids don't need to carry around a laptop that huge. Give them a little Chromebook.
Is it Jamie or Jaime? I don't know which. I'll say Jamie. Haven't looked in the forums, but is anyone else having phantom vibrations from their smartwatch? I get them even when I'm not wearing it. Yes. Guilty.
That's just a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's especially more than, like, smartphone, like phantom rings from phones and phantom vibrations from phones, because it is just constantly stuck to your wrist. It's easy to pick up little things and, yeah.
Tightly on your wrist versus in a pocket or on a table.
I'm still pretty sure it's Android Wear just trolling me.
Christopher asked if there's an IR blaster on the Note 5. No, they got rid of the IR port. That's the one hardware drop. No more Peel smart remote. You know, whatever.
So, I mean, here's the thing. They got rid of the IR blaster. Do they still have the utterly useless UV sensor on the back in that sensor cluster? Because if you get rid of extraneous hardware, that's
in right by the flash, right? That's part of the fingerprint sensing, though, huh? Isn't it?
It's part of the same module, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, don't they actually actively use that for the...
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
I feel like it's part of the thing. But, yeah, it's the same... It's the same cluster on the back.
Is the fingerprint,
for the radio listeners?
Is the scanner like that? Is it easy to reach, or is it tougher because the phone's bigger? Or
the heart rate monitor up there.
Yeah.
It's hold it awkwardly to get the heart rate. You know, you have to hold it awkwardly on any phone because you have to hold it like this. Mm-hmm. You know, or, you know, a little more vertically to get your finger pressed on that sensor. So doesn't make a big difference either way.
Okay.
At least the fingerprint's easy to get to because it's down on the bottom.
Gotcha. Let's see. Adal wants to know, would manufacturers remove existing hardware features which were useful even though it literally cost nothing, like OnePlus removing NFC, Samsung removing IR Blaster? No, because they do
it
not
doesn't
cost nothing.
Not yeah. cost nothing.
Yeah, I mean,
they're not cost anything.
There are licensing fees in all this. You can't just, you know, I was going to say, you can't just buy an off-the-shelf thing.
Well, but people are saying, you know, oh, the NFC chip only costs, you know, 10 cents or whatever. Yeah, but then the license costs, you know, X times more than that.
This goes back, you know, back in the day why FM radios wouldn't be in every phone, because you actually had to license something to use it. It was bizarre and didn't make any sense. But that's why. And
you know. Same deal with QuickCharge. Same reason why we don't see it in phones like the Moto G, which... theoretically, you know, the hardware is there and the CPU to enable that, but it just isn't licensed.
Yeah. And so something like the IR port, though, I'm not sure what kind of licensing there is there, but there is a physical internal cost to routing that little thing, drilling the hole, having the IR port there, having to maintain the software for it, you know, having the module inside connect to the board. You know, there are... You know, you're talking about a phone that's 5.7 inches and 7 millimeters thick, and you have to put all this stuff in there. You may be happy to lose that little tiny bit of stuff up there and losing a feature that barely any people use on top of the cost savings.
Denny wants to know, can someone use Samsung Pay? Can somebody else capture your data over the air when you're hovering your phone near this thing? No,
it's a token system. Even if someone were to snatch it out of the air, they're not actually getting anything.
They're getting a
token that you were trying to hand to the merchant to pay for something, and that's useless unless you're the merchant.
This random string of numbers. The equivalent is sort of like when you use Uber, and the credit card that shows up on the receipt you get is not actually your credit card number. That sort of same thing.
Right. It's a token exchange system.
Gotcha.
Yep. So they just validate that you're making the payment. They don't. Even the merchant in a successful transaction doesn't know your card number or your details or anything like that. It's just authenticating that the payment was made, and that's it. And on top of that, on your phone, all this stuff is secured with Samsung Knox. It's all locked up and tokenized there as well. So you don't have to worry about that either.
Roy says, Russell's GS3 story from this week was scary. Retail is hard, but do you see a future for unlocked carrier-free phone store? If you didn't see it, Russell wandered into it. Should we say what carrier store? Yeah, you were in a T-Mobile store, weren't you?
I was in a T-Mobile store. I'm not afraid of John Ledger anymore.
I've seen the same thing in T-Mobile stores and every other store. Yeah, they promote the one that they're being told to promote, or they have extra stock of, or there's a special to sell this week or next week. And a lot of times that's the, you know, a lot of times I see in T-Mobile stores, it's the $99 phone that's, you know, works on Metro PCS or something that's a super low end, you know, Alcatel phone or whatever. It's unfortunate, but is there going to be a market for a brick and mortar store that sells unlocked phones? Probably not.
We kind of have that over here with Carphone Warehouse, which sells stuff unlocked and also on contract and all the major networks, kind of a Best Buy type of situation.
I think they're
kind of reluctant to sell off contract. Like, they will always push for an on-contract sale.
And that's what we have in Best Buy. They can technically sell you them without a contract or unlocked or whatever, but they are making a lot more money by getting you locked in with not necessarily even a contract at this point, but a payment plan and getting you signed up for that plan at the same time, because they get a cut back on signing you up for a Verizon plan and selling you the Verizon phone on a payment plan rather than selling you the T-Mobile one without a plan that you can take somewhere else.
Yeah.
I just don't think there's enough of a market right now. I mean, there's hardly enough of a market right now for them to sell them online direct to consumers. It's a bit much to ask that somebody's going to go set up a bunch of carrier-free phone stores.
I think, brick and mortar is probably not going to happen just because the average consumer will go in to look at phones and then to decide which one they want. If you're looking at more experienced, you know, more knowledgeable people who know about phones, who know what they want, then they're just going to go online and get what they want.
And then
that's probably where the kind of unlocked revolution, if you want to call it that, is gonna happen.
And you have just the same brick and mortar issue of they're just gonna come showroom at your store and then buy it online no matter what.
Roy wants to know, what is our opinion of the restructuring news out of Lenovo and Motorola? Is this being overblown, or is it the beginning of the end for Motorola, for the Motorola that we all praised the past 3 years? No, I think Lenovo is leveraging what Motorola has done the past 3 years. That's why you're going to see, you know, essentially more Motorola than Lenovo when it comes to smartphones, right?
Yeah. And look, if you want to talk about the loss of jobs or of turnover or whatever, it's not like there hasn't been quite a bit of turnover in the days since first the Google acquisition and then even before then with the old Motorola and the Atrix and Android days.
Yeah, I mean, losing 500 people out of Chicago is a big deal, but yeah, it's not surprising either.
Christopher has another question about the S Pen on the Note 5. If it's made out of plastic or metal, it is a plastic S Pen, just like before. It has a cool little thing where it's flush in the bottom and you push a button to click it and then it pulls out. But inside, it's plastic all the way down here. The clicky part is kind of metallic, so it feels cool and you can
still click it even when it's out of the phone.
Yeah, so it's a click James down, Bond. And that's when it's stored, and then you click it to expose it.
Didn't they used to make...
It doesn't actually do anything, right?
No, that button does not do anything. It still has the button on the side that you you press to launch Air Command and all that stuff, and it's still the same kind of plastic little tip on the end.
Didn't they used to make higher quality S Pens? Like metal versions? Or
one S Pen that was kind of a really crappy Bluetooth mic as well.
Oh, that one. I used to have that. I wonder what I did with it.
There was that, but with the Note 4, they launched a bunch of fancy ones that were just pens. They didn't store in the phone.
Oh, okay.
The stock one still stores in there because, you know, this thing has to be super slender to fit in, you know, fit inside the phone. You know, there's not a lot of room in there. And so they did make fancy ones that, you know, had a little stylus switch on the end or whatever. But yeah, there's nothing too fancy about that. It just clicks.
So am I imagining this, or did Samsung also make an S Pen that you could hold up to your head and it had a speaker and a mic in it?
Or yeah, no. I had it here. I absolutely had it here. I think I reviewed it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I did something. I gave it away, and I think I gave it away with the stipulation that A, you can't send it back, and B, I'm sorry.
I'm trying to think what that was for, because I don't think it was a Note.
Was like, it a tablet or something, I think?
I think it might have been a tablet. It was a third-party one. It wasn't one of the small ones that fits in the phone.
Oh, maybe, you know what? I think I never actually wrote anything because it was that bad, but somewhere I have, maybe, if you go look in our SoundCloud, it might be in there. I have audio.
You recorded something.
Yeah, of just how bad it was, and it was bad. I'll scroll through
now, it. What? Dang it, what was that?
I forget the name, but it was...
I mean, there are third-party ones, but...
Oh, is it in there? There it is, the Samsung Bluetooth S Pen. You want to hear it? I can open other computer back up and play it for you. Find one more question.
Okay. Let me look. Questions.
Find it quicker than that.
Oh, my gosh. Does the keyboard case light up using the screen behind it, or will the screen turn off in the area? It, especially because of AMOLED, it's nice. It can just go black underneath, so you don't have like light leakage out of the side. It just goes black underneath and just illuminates the top where the keyboard is not.
So I would kind of worry about if you're using an AMOLED screen every day and you are one of these insane people who buys this keyboard case and actually uses it day to day, that surely you would just wear your screen unevenly because that's the way AMOLED works, right?
I would think so, yeah.
Slowly wear, you would have a portion of the screen that is worn unevenly, and if you were to use it without the case, it would look kind of strange after a few months or whatever.
I agree with that. Maybe I'm not going to be the one to test it. But
another reason not to use that terrible case.
All right, I found it. You ready? So this is a sample out of the Bluetooth S Pen from Samsung. And this is... I recorded this 3 years ago, so it was a while.
Hey, so it's Phil, and I'm using the Samsung Bluetooth S Pen.
Oh, my God.
And we're going to see how it sounds, but so far our results have not been good, and I kind of feel like I'm going to be standing here with a pen to my ear. I guess that's better than it's actually doing in my ear. So we'll see how it goes.
It was bad. It was not good.
Well, I wonder why they never made another one of those.
I know, right? And I think that's a pretty good place for us to shut down. That was not a good accessory. Like, I remember now, I specifically didn't even bother writing anything up, because it was going to be one of those, don't buy this. Just don't. No. No.
Aye.
Oh, man. As we are every week, we're brought to you by shopandroid.com. I don't think we have any Note 5 stuff in just yet, because, you know, the thing is all of 36 hours old at this point. But, look for it shortly. All sorts of other things going on sale in there. Next couple weeks we're at home and just kind of working. After that, we'll be in Berlin starting, I guess, August 31st is when we all show up. So it's about to get crazy. We've got plenty of Note 5 stuff coming. Jerry's still working on Moto G stuff. Russell's still working on OnePlus 2 stuff. I'm going to help do some stuff. Hey, I got Project 5 finally, so I might write a little more on that maybe. We'll see. I don't know.
This has been the week where Phil realizes all the things I've talked about 2 months ago. It's pretty awesome.
I know. I'm like, hey, it does this. And Andrew's like, yeah, shut up.
Yeah. Well, and then I just link him to the specific article I wrote on androidcentral.com.
You should really do a story. Click. There it is. Sorry. I'm sorry.
But how about going back to the giant Nexus 6 again?
It's big, but I don't hate it as much as I remember. Maybe I'm just more used to it since I've been using the G4.
That's about what I've heard. I've talked to a few people with Project 5.
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing. I don't hate it, and I like it enough to use Project 5.
More important is that everything else still works, like Google Voice did, you know, 3 days ago. So.
Yes, not so much doom and gloom, huh?
Not for me, anyway, no.
Nope, same.
So. All right, I think that's going to do it this week. We will absolutely be back next week. Everybody listening at home, thank you. Everybody watching live, hi. How are you? You made it. We're at the end. Alex, Andrew, Russell, thank you guys.
Phil, thank you.
See y'all next week.
See ya.
Bye.